Hey, everybody, this is Lane Kaplan-Levenson. You're about to hear a conversation I had with Cokie Roberts, the journalist and author born and bred in New Orleans. Cokie is a Morning Edition commentator on NPR. She's also a political commentator for ABC News and is an author who's written multiple books, history books, and specifically women in history books. Titles include We Are Our Mother's Daughters, Founding Mothers, and Ladies of Liberty. There's more. You can go check out Cokie's work online. But this is not a traditional tripod episode. This is something we're calling Tripod Extras, exclusive interviews with guests in between new episode releases. So this first Tripod Extra segment goes deep with Cokie Roberts on her congressional family, her professional career, and her favorite tales of New Orleans politics. It was an absolute pleasure getting to meet Cokie and speak with her in the WWNO studios. I hope she enjoyed it as much as I did, and I hope you enjoy our conversation.
So my father was elected to Congress before I was born.
And who are your parents?
Lindy Boggs and Hale Boggs. And we lived half year in Washington and half year in New Orleans. So we were here from the time that Congress let out, whenever that would be, until January when Congress convened. So we went to school here from September to January, and in Washington from January to June. And we did that until my brother was in seventh grade, and I was at that point in fourth grade. So we started going to school year-round in Washington and spending summers and Christmas here in New Orleans.
Before you went full-time to D.C., where were you going to school?
I went to Sacred Heart here and Sacred Heart in Washington.
Oh, okay. And do you have any memories of, since you were kind of living this half-life here, half-life
right
there, as a kid feeling one way or the other about these two pretty different
places?
No,
it was just completely normal to me. The time when it was hard was when my father ran for governor, which was basically through 1951. The election was January of 52. And he lost, and some evil child taunted me. One of the nuns brought me inside, because it was during recess, and brought me inside and showed me a picture of my school in Washington, Stone Ridge, in the snow, and said, "Won't you be happy to be going back?" So it was a very sweet thing to do.
Wow. And it's funny, because you were actually, as a child, living what many people perceive as the dream as an adult of being able to live in New Orleans half the time and be somewhere else the other when they don't really want to be here anymore.
But no, but we were here in the summer.
Oh,
we were
so,
always
okay
here in the summer.
Never mind. Thinking about your parents, you also watched the two people that raised you share an industry and kind of share a platform.
Right. Well, my parents met in college. My mother was at Nuke and my father at Tulane. And he was the editor of the Hullabaloo and she was the women's editor. And it was during the 30s, a time of tremendous ferment in the country. And so they were very politically active and they became big creators, along with a few other people, of the People's League. And it was to get at Huey Long's successors. And so they were involved in politics from a very young age, and they were in it together. And so certainly in that era, there would have been no question of my mother running. It would have been my father who would run. And he did as a very young man. He was elected at age 26. And she was 24. I think about that now, you know. And there she was with two babies. My brother was born 8 days after my father's first election. And my sister was 15 months old. And there was my mother going to Washington pre-World War II with these two babies. And she's 24 and my father's 26. And I think about it now and it's just mind-boggling because, you know, a 24-year-old is considered a child still on their parents' medical insurance. Now, 24-year-olds were considerably more adult than they are now. But it was still a time of a very formal protocol in Washington where you had to go calling on people and all of that. So there was a very defined role for a congressional wife. But it's also true that because they had been such partners for so long, that anything that he was involved in, she was involved in. So Mama was always his campaign manager. So by the time he then went into the leadership, in the early 1960s, she had been running campaigns and at that point started really running the district. And then so by the time he was killed in 72, it was just a no-brainer for her to take over. But it was different for her to be the member rather than the member's wife, and she would be the first to say that.
So growing up as a child in New Orleans, was New Orleans history something that your family talked about? And in what way? What was the relationship there?
Well, because of my ancestors, we always knew that my mother's family, the Claiborne family, had come as a result of the election of 1800. And that's such a great political story because Jefferson and Burr were tied unintentionally, but Burr was keeping it going. And it was 36 ballots in the House of Representatives. And William Charles Cole Claiborne was this kid, really. He was seated in the House at 23 in contravention of the Constitution because he was the only person there was from Tennessee. And when the election of 1800 went to the House of Representatives, Tennessee had one vote, as did Massachusetts, as did Virginia. And so there was this very young man with one the same number of votes as very senior people, and many of them. And I had always heard the story that he broke the tie, but that's not what happened. What happened was that he stayed true to Jefferson throughout the 36 ballots. The hope was of Jefferson's opponents was that he was so young and so vain that he could be turned, and he wasn't. He was not turned, and so he stuck with Jefferson through the 36 ballots, and the next month got the political payoff as the governor of the Mississippi Territory and went to Natchez. And then when the purchase happened, right, came down the river. So it was always a family story that the Louisiana Purchase was intricately entwined with the family.
Well, on politics, New Orleans is famous, infamous for its political history. Is there kind of a favorite New Orleans politics story?
There's one that that the family always told that, again, was, before my time, but it's one they love to tell, which is that when Franklin Roosevelt came to town, all of the sort of civic leaders who were trying to show off New Orleans as a city of great culture and business acumen were very concerned that the mayor, whose name was Maestri, not say anything, because the mayor was one of the people sort of fellow, apparently a wonderful person, but not educated and not fancy. And so with Roosevelt here, they had essentially told the mayor he could not say a word. And so finally there is a dinner someplace downtown, and they have, the toast and all of that. And Roosevelt turns to the mayor and says, "Well, Mr. Mayor, wouldn't you like to say a few words?" And poor Maestri is looking at all these people who are going to kill him if he says anything. And he looks at the president and he says, "How'd you like dim oysters?" And that was always a great, great New Orleans story.
That's incredible. And that was it.
He
was like,
that was it. He could figured he couldn't get in trouble that way.
Oh, my gosh. Well,
I've since met some Maestri descendants, and they're lovely people.
Good.
I'm sure he was.
Okay, so this is the last question because we're gonna wrap. But if you could assign me a tripod episode, what would you want me to make?
Huh. The Ursulines. I mean, the Ursulines came here in 1727. And think of it. They established a school for free blacks and Native Americans in the 1720s and did it, totally thumbing their noses at the bishop, who thankfully was in France. So what their story throughout the centuries is really quite something.
Yeah. Okay, Ursulines.
Right. The other thing I love on WWNO is the traffic reports. Because, they go to Ann Claiborne to Morris, and it's all my name. Those are all my names. It's not just my family. They're my names.
I was going to say, will you please say your whole name?
My name is Mary Martha Corrine Morrison Claiborne Boggs Roberts.
Say your name one more time.
I'm Cokie Roberts. Actually, that's Mary Martha Corrine Morrison Claiborne Boggs Roberts, and I'll tripod you later.
Cokie, thank you so
much. All right, thank you. It was fun.